tourists from 2014 to 2017. This has left many asking, where is America's so-called free speech and democracy?
This is not something that we should share. Somehow it looks like freedom of expression and free speech has become the enemy rather than being or ally. And now the U.S. is blocking sites that are trying to provide information, that are trying to give another perspective and other view of the events that are happening worldwide.
All the news channels whose sites have been seized share something similar. Their narrative is different to that of news channels belonging to the United States and its allies. For example, they offered another side of the story to events unfolding in Yemen or Palestine. But how dangerous can that be when the United States does not provide viewers an alternative narrative to the news?
This is very dangerous. Without allowing other views and other narratives, the public cannot make, cannot make their minds. They cannot really understand the complexity of issues and have their own opinion about what is happening. Another danger is that we are in danger of manipulating, the information, manipulating reality.
Iranian-based websites are online like before under the domain .ir. For example, you can visit PressTV at PressTV.ir. Yemen's Al-Masira.net was quick to open a new working website at AlMasira.com. Other channels are expected to follow suit in a similar fashion by changing their domain name. The Iranian presidential office says closing a number of our news websites is an unconstructive measure in light of the Vienna nuclear negotiations. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Saeed Khatibzadeh denounced the move as a systematic attempt by the U.S. to undermine freedom of expression on a global level and to silence independent voices in media. The Tehran-based Islamic Radios and Television Union says the U.S. seizure of dozens of websites is a shameful attack on rights of people across the world. The owners of the popular Ansar Allah movement have condemned the U.S. move, saying it signifies that these TV networks are influential and their activities have frightened the hegemonic regimes that claim to be advocates of freedom of speech. Critics say the U.S. administration's campaign to portray Iran and others in West Asia as destabilizing players in the region is aimed at benefiting America's military-industrial complex. They also say democracies should allow all voices to be heard and offer the viewer an opportunity to choose which narrative they wish to listen to.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. in the limelight.
Recent research revealed that British-made military components and hardware were used by Israeli regime forces during recent airstrikes on Gaza, in spite of government claims about Britain's tough arms export controls. Here we present you an article in this regard written by Rafif Ziada, a lecturer in Comparative Politics of West Asia at SOAS University of London, titled British Backing for Israel Helps to Sustain the Unbearable Status Quo. Please stay with us to hear more about the story. Rafif Ziada wrote, "I often tell my first-year politics students that the study of politics is the study of power. And what we saw recently, above all, was the glaring disparity in power between Israeli regime and the Palestinians. When Palestinians in Gaza and around the world celebrated the news of a ceasefire, breathing a sigh of relief, many commentators hailed it as a return to calm. However, for Palestinians, calm means a status quo of occupation, blockade, and repression. In fact, one can say the true nature of this conflict is what happens between the periodic escalations, the constant grind of life under apartheid. Israeli regime power over the Palestinians is not simply military, and it is not only maintained by force, it is sustained by international support. The significance of this support becomes obvious during Israeli regime military offensives. Recently, the U.S. willfully obstructed a U.N. Security Council statement on Gaza to buy more time for the Zionist regime's bombing campaign. But the key elements of this international support are consistent. The most substantial diplomatic and financial support comes from the U.S. $3.8 billion annually, most of which is in military aid and circulates back to the U.S. arms industry. International government support for the regime of Israel has continued even as the Israeli regime political and military leaders have been accused of serious violations of international law and the illegal use of force, abuses serious enough to warrant an international criminal court investigation. The UK has also given the Zionist regime its full backing. While Britain has a particular legacy in the conflict, as a former colonial power in historical Palestine, support continues today with a thriving arms trade between the two regimes. Approved export licenses for arms sales from the UK to the Zionist regime cover components for small arms, ammunition, night sight technology, and intelligence. The UK also imports Israeli regime-made weapons. For example, in 2016, the Zionist regime's major arms producer, Elbit, in conjunction with Thales UK, completed delivery on most of the 54 Watchkeeper drones as part of an £800 million contract. Between 2018 and 2020, the British Ministry of Defence bought 46 million pounds worth of military equipment from Elbit. Such weapons are marketed as battle-tested, demonstrating the ways that day-to-day violence against Palestinians spares a profitable industry with international reach. Recent research revealed that British-made military components and hardware were used by Israeli regime forces during recent airstrikes on Gaza. In spite of government claims about Britain's tough arms export controls, the Israeli regime F-35 warplanes that are used to bomb the densely populated territory have component parts from a host of UK suppliers, including BAE Systems, GE Aviation, Martin Baker, Selex, Cobham, Ultra Electronics, UTC Actuation Systems, and Rolls-Royce. According to Campaign Against Arms Trade, between 2016 and 2020, the UK issued single individual export licenses for arms sales to the occupied Palestinian lands to a value of £400 million. This is a significant increase from £67 million in licenses from 2011 to 2015. Last month, in Leicester, campaigners occupied the rooftop of UAV Tactical Systems, a subsidiary of Elbit Systems. Elbit Systems UK has 9 production sites and offices in the country. The Leicester facility manufactures the Hermes drone that has been used by the Zionist regime military in Gaza. Campaigners managed to disrupt production for several days before another protest started against an Elbit factory in Oldham. These actions highlight just how much Britain is entwined with the Zionist regime's military power within innocuous buildings hidden in industrial estates in England. One of the Zionist regime's major private weapons firms operates freely, with no consequences for how its weapons are used in Palestine or elsewhere. Essential British company JCB, which makes bulldozers, was one of the 3 British firms listed by the UN as complicit in the construction of illegal settlements and demolition of Palestinian homes. JCB is currently being examined by the UK government to determine whether its due diligence process complies with human rights guidelines set by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. While the Zionist regime portrays itself as a small regime simply acting in self-defense, in reality it is carrying out a decades-long military occupation, denying Palestinian refugees the right to return and continuing to displace hundreds of families. It has one of the most equipped militaries in the world, aided and abetted by the backing of international powers. This is why Palestinians have appeal to people of conscience around the world to protest against such blatant complicity with the Zionist regime's violations of human rights and international law. British-based organizations such as War on Want and Campaign Against Arms Trade have called for an end to military exports to the occupied lands and a review of UK arms sales. This is an important step in challenging the unequivocal support the Zionist regime receives in military aid while it continues to violate Palestinian rights daily. When MP Zora Sultana held up pictures of Palestinian children martyred during the latest assault on Gaza and directly asked Boris Johnson if UK-made weapons were used in the bombardment of Gaza, he did not deny it. But he quickly deflected the question with a string of platitudes about Britain's support for a two-state solution. Endless lip service to the two-state solution rings hollow as the US, UK, and EU assist the fake regime of Israel in creating facts on the ground that have made it functionally impossible, including ongoing illegal settlement construction, land confiscation, displacement, restrictions on Palestinian movement, and the incarceration of thousands of Palestinians. Hiding behind the smokescreen of quiet diplomacy, these states continuously undermine Palestinian attempts to hold the Zionist regime to account. For example, Boris Johnson has opposed the International Criminal Court inquiry into atrocities committed in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Al-Quds. In the face of this, Palestinians can only point out the hypocrisy as they continue to protest. The general strike called on May 18th by all Palestinians was a heartening moment of unity, breaking the barriers imposed by military checkpoints and walls. Palestinians also rely on the power of ordinary people around the world, willing to speak out and challenge the complicity of their own governments in maintaining this conflict. The demonstrations around the world, across many capitals and small towns, and the statements of solidarity by trade unions, artists, and academics attest to the fact that more and more people are coming to understand the status quo is untenable. Some may choose to avert their eyes after Gaza, Al-Quds, and West Bank are no longer dominating the headlines, but Palestinians do not have that option. Ending the arms trade with the Israeli regime is a crucial step for unmasking the illusion of calm that obscures the ongoing oppression of Palestinians, and for honestly confronting Britain's role in maintaining this brutal status quo.
Harsh sanctions against Iran's civil aviation industry. January 12, 2017. Tehran, Mehrabad Airport. A new airplane has arrived in Iran after more than three decades. Purchasing this airplane from Airbus Company was made possible by the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. In 2018 alone, Iranian aviation companies transported some 30 million passengers via local and international flights. The task was achieved by 18 airlines, with a total of 150 active airplanes. Iran's civil aviation industry was one of the first sectors to be restricted and sanctioned during the first days of the Islamic Revolution of 1979. As the scope of the sanctions expanded in the following years, the development of this industry was slowed down to an extent that some of the neighboring countries that had founded their aviation industry decades after Iran got ahead. Despite the pressure on it and the loss of money and lives due to the existing demand in the country and the support given by the government, Iran's aviation industry was able to survive and continue its activities. Now, the question that comes to mind is how an industry which was completely imported from outside not only remained in business, but also achieved growth. How were they able to purchase airplanes? How did Iran find the professional human resources and specialists? Do international regulations match the sanctions imposed on the industry? In an industry which the life cycle of all parts and equipment are inspected under international regulations, how did Iran get the spare parts and certificates needed to continue to work? When the Iran nuclear deal was signed in 2015, what opportunities opened to the industry?
The JCPOA for aviation was not fair play. They designed a very dirty play against the aviation industry of Iran.
This is an inside story of efforts made to keep this very modern industry running, despite the harsh sanctions levied against Iran. With the establishment of companies such as Iranian Airways and Persian Air Services in the 1940s, Iran's civil aviation industry began its work. However, the official start of this industry in Iran dates back to the year 1962. On February 24 of that year, the government ordered the merger of Iran Airways and Persian Air Services establishing the Iranian National Airline, or Iran Air, as a state-run flag carrier air service company. Iran Air, which is also known as HOMA, grew quickly due to the support lent by the government, and in the 1970s blossomed into a successful airline. In 1975, Iran Air was the fastest growing airline in the world, with dozens of flights to European countries per week. Iran was also among the first countries in the world to purchase the Boeing 747 SP, which was the most modern airplane of the time. After buying the aircraft, Iran was able to launch one of the longest non-stop air services between Tehran and New York at the time. Captain Abdullahi, who is currently the oldest living pilot in Iran, was in charge of Iran Air flight operations back then. Iran Air was in full blossom. However, when it came to maintenance, it was totally dependent on foreign companies. With the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, many Westerners who worked in various industries, including the aviation industry, left the country. The exit of these Western specialists was a big shock to the industry, prompting the local forces to fill the void. Four days after the U.S. Embassy takeover in Tehran, on November 8, 1979, the control tower at New York's JFK Airport contacted an Iran Air airliner as it was approaching for landing. It informed the captain that due to political tensions between the United States and Iran, the passenger plane had been denied permission for landing in all U.S. airports. The aircraft was then forced to fly onto Canada for landing. From then on, all flights between Tehran and New York, among the longest non-stop flight routes, were canceled. Over the course of the next four decades, and under different pretexts, the scope of U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran expanded. U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran included a network of interconnected restrictions imposed on the Iranian nation by both the U.S. President and Congress. The sanctions targeted economic investments in Iran, the oil and aviation industries, science and technology firms, and even the country's central bank. As a result of the unilateral U.S. sanctions, other countries, too, were practically unable to do business with the Islamic Republic. This was because the sanctions targeting the international business firms and governments which wanted to do business with Iran would either be punished by the U.S. or risk losing their ties with the U.S. In the past couple of years, it has practically become impossible for Iran to purchase airplanes or its spare parts from manufacturing companies across the globe. This dire situation has forced Iranian airlines to either seek spare parts via unofficial channels or through third parties. The sanctions ban Iran from obtaining equipment and spare parts, which use more than 10% by value of U.S. technology or services for their production. The situation has prevented Iran from purchasing new airplanes for decades, turning Iran's air fleet into one of the oldest in the world. But how do the sanctions work, and what impact do they have on the country's aviation industry? To better understand this matter, different aspects must be reviewed separately.
Unfortunately, the sanction we have imposed on us has impacted the entire air transport industry. It's not only airline. We have seen that also airport, air navigation system. Also, the process of transferring money from Iranian airline to other airlines have been affected.
Due to the high prices of new airplanes, they are purchased via companies that provide financial services. Finance companies act as go-betweens and sign a contract with the buyer to purchase an airplane from the manufacturer.
We are looking everywhere in the market, but we cannot lease aircraft from the very famous leasing companies because they don't want work with Iran due to lack of OFAC license. So we have to go to the open market brokers, which it takes time and of course more expensive for us.
An unofficial market with limited sellers in it, in addition to the problems related to financing the purchases and the difficulty of transferring money. Iranian airlines were left with few options, forcing them over the years to buy any type of airplane that they could get their hands on. Having an old fleet is not a problem per se, as long as the necessary maintenance is done to the planes and the spare parts needed for them are available. However, in Iran's case, the bans and restrictions they employed for the routine repairs and maintenance led to complications. Sometimes not finding an essential part like an engine makes an airplane useless.
737 fleet in Osman Airlines during 25 years of operation has never faced with any incident or accident. Very safe fleet for Osman Airlines. But we found that due to lack of support by Boeing, we are not able more to continue operation of this aircraft. By this means, we ground 3 aircraft 737 with 500 seats. We lose this revenue, which was very good revenue for us, but we respect the safety.
In practice, such limitations have a real impact on flight operations and force the schedules to change. At Iranian Airlines, delays and cancellations of flights due to technical problems often occur. Under such circumstances, in order to maintain safety measures, there is no other choices. These delays and cancellations are not only harmful to airlines' income and planning, but also have a negative psychological impact on passengers. To hear a flight has been delayed or canceled, even if it is for non-technical problems, can make passengers anxious. Another odd problem related to the sanctions is that airports in other countries refuse to give jet fuel to Iranian planes on international routes. After the Iran nuclear deal, the ban on fuel was removed. However, as the United States pulled out of the deal, the situation became more complicated than before. Sometimes foreign airports would refuse to give Iranian flights even the most basic services. The issue, which experts have contradicting views about, is the degree to which the numerous restrictions have affected the safety of Iranian flights. Despite some experts saying that in the present situation, Iranian flights are unsafe, others working in this field believe it to be otherwise. Aside from its short-term impacts, the U.S. sanctions have had long-term negative impact on the country. Iran is a huge country with an area four times that of Germany, with a vast range of geographical features, including cold mountainous regions in the north and west, massive hot deserts in the central parts, and warm and humid coasts in the Persian Gulf. One of the best ways to decrease the length of time required to reach and connect remote locations of the country is to provide sustainable and balanced development by expanding the aviation industry. Despite the high portion of airports across the country, due to the sanctions, Iran is not capable of buying small short-range airplanes to provide air service to them. That is why many of these airports are hardly active. This problem has slowed down the economic growth and development in remote areas. Due to the global nature of aviation, slapping sanctions on a part of the aviation industry will have repercussions that go beyond the limits of the local airlines and the people of the region. Iran's unique geographical location prompts many international flights to use its airspace to pass from the south of the Persian Gulf over to the west or north of the country. In order to provide satisfactory services for the international flights flying over Iran and passing through its airspace, airports must be equipped with modern, updated technology to match latest standards. In December 2018, a Norwegian MAX 737 jetliner flying from Dubai to Stockholm lost one of its engines when passing over Iran. The aircraft was forced to make an emergency landing in Shiraz International Airport in southern Iran. The incident coincided with the temporary shutdown of the U.S. government. As a result, the jetliner was grounded for 70 days until the Norwegian company was able to receive an OFAC license to transfer a new engine to Iran. During the period that the U.S. sanctions had been imposed on the nation, Iran's civil aviation organization has made many efforts at various international bodies to inform the global community of the dangers caused by these sanctions for the aviation industry. In 2004, Iran presented a report on the negative impacts of the U.S. sanctions to the 35th General Assembly of the ICAO. In that report, Iran detailed how the sanctions on its aviation industry was doing harm. The reasons stated by Iran for lifting the sanctions were based on the contradictions that the sanctions had with the clear objectives stated in the Chicago Convention, which is regarded as the international treaty for the aviation industry and has been signed by all members. In several articles of that convention, it has been reiterated that safety is the number one priority for the aviation industry. Article 4 of the treaty says, each member state agrees not to use civil aviation for any purpose inconsistent with the aims of this convention. Article 44 calls on the members to meet the needs of the people of the world for safe, regular, efficient, and economical air transport, avoid discrimination between contracting states, and promote safety of flight in international air navigation. ICAO deployed a fact-finding mission to Iran to investigate the issues cited in the report. In May 2005, the ICAO issued a report based on the findings of its fact-finding team. The report noted that the U.S. imposed sanctions had threatened the safety of aviation in Iran. It clearly stated that the U.S. sanctions were in contradiction to the spirit and letter of the Chicago Convention, describing the sanctions as a tool for foreign policy. It noted that aviation safety, which affects human life and human rights, stands above political differences. At the end, the report concluded that it was the ICAO's responsibility as a UN agency to take the lead to lift the U.S.-imposed sanctions. Despite all the efforts carried out by Iran and the ICAO, there was no progress made in lifting the sanctions by this means.
The problem is that those rulings, they don't have any enforcement power. They cannot enforce. Just they give some sort of recommendation. The recommendations given to U.S. government that really they are spearheading the sanction, which they don't pay attention to.
As a result of years of limitations and pressure, Iranian airlines were forced to find alternative ways for their survival. To achieve this goal, the training of specialists in this field was the first step. The airlines made their utmost effort to reduce their dependency on foreign specialists and foreign companies. This could be one of the major achievements of Iranian airlines during this period. Recently, Iran Air announced that it had carried out the C-check of an advanced airplane.
I remember 10 years ago, I wanted to ship one engine to UK. We didn't have engine transportation standard. We asked one of the very famous factory in Iran to build us, and they did. Very nice stand with all specific specification and very accurate dimensions. When we sent engine to UK, they asked us, where is the license for this transportation stand? Why you put our brand on a stand which we don't know about the manufacturer of the stand? Today, we cut to ship engine to that facility. We do repair in house.
The production of spare parts and equipment that could be made locally was also added in the program so Iran could supply some of the parts it needed inside the country. Each year, Iran holds an aviation exhibition in Kish Island to provide a venue for some part manufacturers to showcase their products. Ibrahimi Advanced Simulator Company has been building simulators in one of Tehran's suburbs in the past years. This company, despite its limited resources, carried out its activities using investments from the private sector. Building a flight simulator is a very complex task, and it is normally achieved through the interaction of several separate firms working in cooperation with the manufacturer of the airplane. This company has recently built a simulator for one of the most modern airplanes in the world. Ibrahimi says companies from outside the country are interested in buying the product that was made in his small firm. In 2015, when the world powers in Iran, after years of negotiations, finally signed the nuclear agreement, a large portion of the nuclear sanctions imposed by the United States were lifted. In a short time, broad-ranging negotiations got underway for investments in different sectors of the Iranian industries. Airbus and Boeing, as the biggest manufacturers of airplanes and spare parts, came to Iran and signed several contracts worth billions of dollars. Signing these contracts would make a huge profit for them, and Iran's aviation industry would be revived. Iran Air signed contracts for 100 Airbus airplanes, 80 Boeing jetliners, and 20 ATR aircraft. Iran Asiman Airlines signed a deal with Boeing Company for 30 MAX 737 jetliners, which could later be doubled to 60. In June 2017, Airbus announced an initial contract had been signed with Iran Air Tour Company for 45 airplanes, as well as 28 more airplanes for Zagros Company. About 1 week before the U.S. President Donald Trump officially entered the White House, the first Airbus airplane arrived in Tehran, amid a lot of excitement and media hype.
We are committed to partnering in areas like air traffic management, like training of pilots, and of course all the necessary support to Iran Air, who will become one of the greatest Middle East airlines, I'm sure of it.
In the meantime, other Iranian airlines had started talks to buy new airplanes, while Trump was threatening to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal.
The Iran deal, which may be the single worst deal I've ever seen drawn by anybody.
The news alarmed the airplane manufacturers that had signed contracts with the Iranians and were making efforts to save the deals.
In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction.
The move was a big shock to international markets, in particular the aviation industry. Airbus, Boeing, and ATR sent representatives to hold talks with the U.S. government so they could save their contracts. Despite all their efforts, OFAC licenses were revoked and all the contracts were eventually canceled. As a result, after long negotiations to buy more than 250 airplanes, Iran Air received only 16, and once again, efforts to renovate and develop Iran's civil aviation industry ended in failure.
They designed a very dirty play against the aviation industry of Iran. They arrive here, they open many gates in front of us, we close those gates that we had before, and then after, they close the new recently opened doors.
One of the last legal actions for lifting the U.S. sanctions had been to lodge a formal complaint at the International Court of Justice. After the U.S. quit the JCPOA, Iran filed a complaint against the United States based on the 1955 Treaty of Amity between the two countries.
Unanimously, the United States of America, in accordance with its obligations under the 1955 Treaty of Amity, shall remove any impediments to the free exportation to the territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran of medicines and medical devices, foodstuffs and agricultural commodities, and spare parts, equipment, and associated services, including warranty, maintenance, repair services, and inspections necessary for the safety of aviation.
In response to the court verdict, the U.S. questioned the jurisdiction of the Court of Law, which is one of the highest regarded legal institutions in the world, and also pulled out of the treaty.
You know, we're disappointed that the court failed to recognize that it has no jurisdiction to issue any order relating to these sanctions measures with the United States. I am therefore announcing today that the United States is terminating the Treaty of Amity with Iran.
Despite being a legal and diplomatic victory for Iran, the court verdict failed to improve conditions in the country, particularly in the aviation industry. Ultimately, Iran, with 310 planes, of which only 150 are active, is once again forced to find new ways of maintaining and growing its air fleet. The sanctions are exerting a lot of pressure on Iranian airlines. Yet many of those working in the aviation industry believe that there is always a way to control the sanctions, or at least reduce their negative impacts to a minimum.
We are facing with the sanction, but we are managing the sanction. We have less aircraft than customer demand in the Iran network, but we are feeding this demand by safety.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are going to continue discussing Imam Khomeini's testament, where he explains the two weighty things, namely the Noble Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, or the infallible progeny of the Prophet of Islam. Imam Khomeini explains the great achievements of the Islamic Revolution and warns against the threats ahead of this revolution and the oppressed nations. Stay with us, please. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, believed that the traditional jurisprudence is the explicator of the school of the Prophet and his infallible successors, and calls on the Iranian nation to stick to this school firmly. He writes in his testament, "I ask Muslim nations seriously and urgently to follow the infallible imams and the political, social, economic, and military culture of these great guides of mankind properly and wholeheartedly through sacrificing their souls and dear ones, so that they do not become deviated from the traditional jurisprudence, which is the school of prophethood and imamat, and guarantees the growth and grandeur of nations, and do not listen to the temptation of adversary enticers and enemies of truth and religion. And they should know that a single deviated step will be the prelude for collapse of religion, Islamic laws, and the divine rule of justice." Imam Khomeini attached high importance to congregational prayers, especially Friday prayers and morning ceremonies of the infallible imams, particularly Imam Hussein, peace upon him. He writes, "Never neglect Friday prayer and congregational prayer, which indicate the political aspect of prayer. This Friday prayer is among the greatest graces of Almighty God to the Islamic Republic of Iran. And people should never neglect the morning ceremonies of the infallible imams, especially the Lord of the Oppressed and Master of Martyrs, Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, peace upon him. And they should know that it is the order of the imams, peace upon them, to rever this historical epic of Islam, and whatever curse is uttered against the oppressors of Ahlul Bayt are all heroic cries of nations against the oppressive leaders throughout history. And it is necessary to loudly and effectively remind in the elegies and panegyrics of the rightful imams the catastrophes and oppressions of every era and place." Imam Khomeini emphasizes that his testament is not limited to the Iranian nation, and that he has in fact addressed the entire Islamic world and the whole oppressed and downtrodden in the world. He writes, "We know that the Islamic revolution, which cut the hand of the world devourers and oppressors from Iran, has triumphed with the unseen divine assistance. Had there not been the able hand of the one God, it would have been impossible for the 36 million population to triumph against such an anti-Islamic and anti-clergy propaganda, particularly during the recent 100 years, and such excessive seditious acts of the writers on media and speeches and anti-Islamic and anti-national circles, and so many centers of debauchery, gambling, drinks, and narcotics in order to draw the young generation to corruption and indifference, and efforts to seclude and isolate the clergy and also divert many of them. It was impossible for this nation to rise up unanimously in such condition with a unified idea and the shouts of Allahu Akbar across the country to dismantle the internal and external powers with astonishing and miraculous sacrifices to hold the authority of the country. Thus, there is no doubt that the Islamic revolution of Iran is different from all revolutions, both in the emergence and quality of a struggle, and also the motive of revolution and uprising. No doubt, this divine present and unseen gift has been granted by the all-merciful God to this oppressed and looted nation." Imam Khomeini continues in his testament, "Islam and the Islamic government is a divine phenomenon which, if it is put into practice, will secure in the best way the prosperity of our children in this world and the hereafter, and is able to efface oppressions, lootings, corruptions, and aggressions with red pen, blood, and take humans to their desirable ideal. Islam is the school which, unlike non-monotheistic schools, plays a role and interferes in and supervises all individual, social, material, spiritual, cultural, political, military, and economic efforts, and does not neglect even the most trivial points in the education of human being and the society and the material and the spiritual progress. Now that, with the help and grace of God, the Islamic Republic has been established by the able hand of the devoted nation, it is necessary for the nation to try to materialize and safeguard its whole contents as the preservation of Islam on top of all obligations. Today, it is an obligation, especially for the Iranian nation and the entire Muslims in general, to preserve this divine trust with all their effort and try to create the requirements of its survival and remove the barriers and problems." Imam Khomeini points to the element of safeguarding the victory, saying, "Undoubtedly, the element of survival of the Islamic Revolution is the very element of victory, and the nation knows the element of victory. And the future generations will read in history that its two pillars have been the divine motive and the lofty purpose of Islamic rule, and that the convergence of the nation all over the country with one motto has been for this very motive and purpose. I recommend to all present and future generations that if they want Islam and the rule of God to survive powerfully and cut the hand of the internal and external colonialists and exploiters from your country, you should not lose this divine motive that Almighty God has recommended in the Noble Quran. And you should know that, opposite of this motive, which is the element of victory and its survival, is forgetting the goal and discord and difference. It is not accidental that the propaganda horns across the world have focused all their efforts on rumors and seditious lies and spent billions of dollars on it. And the constant trips of the opponents of the Islamic Republic to the region are not without motive."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khomeini's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
I tell you with confidence, the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and it will not stop. May 7th, 2021. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abu al-Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, upon his pure and immaculate household, upon his chosen companions, and upon those who follow them until the Day of Judgment. The issue of Palestine continues to be the most important and active issue for the Islamic Ummah collectively. The policies of the oppressive and cruel capitalism have driven a people out of their homes, their homeland, and their ancestral roots, and instead it has installed a terrorist regime and has housed a foreign people therein. Can one find a logic weaker and shakier than that of the establishment of the Zionist regime? On the basis of their claim, the Europeans oppressed the Jews during the Second World War. Therefore, they believe that the oppression against the Jews should be revenged by displacing a nation in West Asia and by committing a horrible massacre in that country. This is the logic which Western governments have relied on with their wholehearted and blind support for the Zionist regime, thereby disapproving all their false claims about human rights and democracy. It has been 70 years now that they have been sticking with this laughable and at the same time tragic story, and every now and then they add a new chapter to it. Since the first day, the Zionists turned the usurped Palestine into a terrorist base. Israel is not a country, rather it is a terrorist camp against the Palestinian nation and other Muslim nations. Fighting against this despotic regime is fighting against oppression and terrorism, and this is a collective responsibility. Another noteworthy point is that although that the usurping regime was established in 1948, the ground for occupying that sensitive Islamic region had been prepared years before that. Those specific years coincided with the active interference of Westerners in Islamic countries with the purpose of establishing secularism and excessive and blind nationalism, and also with the goal of installing despotic governments who were infatuated with and controlled by the West. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.